Unlimited talk at your fingertips. VoiceAmerica.com.
Your Power Mission welcomes you to the Power of One. What's Your Mission? With host, author, speaker, and the nation's foremost authority on the new civic America, Deborah Berg. In the next hour, Deborah and her guests uncover citizen-inspired movements and solutions and share how these exciting ideas are replicating across America and around the world. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to turn up your speakers. Here's your host, Deborah Berg.
Well, welcome to the Power of One. What's Your Mission? I am your host, Deborah Berg, and thank you for tuning into the show today because it's going to be a show about a topic of great importance and one you won't hear a lot about in the media, at least yet anyway. On this show, it's my goal always to give you the important news on subjects that the media has overlooked, especially the solutions to social problems that give us all terrific hope for the future. And that's why I call this show Your Bump from the Soundbite Slump. I cover a trend on this show that I discovered on an 8-year journey across America. It's a trend of everyday heroes saying enough is enough to problems that have gone on for far too long. And if you're new to this trend and haven't yet grabbed your copy of the book, The Power of One, The Unsung Everyday Heroes, Rescuing America's Cities, you will want to visit my website, www.yourpowermission.com, and get a special author-signed version at a special price of $10 off the publisher's rate, only $19.95. And it's packed full of fascinating stories of 35 heroes in 30 cities who've given up six-figure incomes, 401ks, personal lives, even an NFL pension in one case, to go and invent new ways to solve everything from poverty to pedophiles and cybercrime to child abductors. And even more amazing is how their ideas and inventions are replicating across America now and around the world. And while you're at yourpowermission.com, subscribe to the free newsletter called Heroes, and it's right on the upper left-hand side of the homepage. That's where you'll get all the latest updates, new ideas, and innovations going on out there, including hero stories, helpful tips for your socially responsible business or your social nonprofit if you have one. And when you subscribe to it, you're going to get my free special report, How to Find the Perfect Volunteer Opportunity for You and for Your Family. So just go to yourpowermission.com, click on the Heroes subscription link, and remember, I do assure you, I'll never sell names to other email lists or companies, so you can feel safe in doing so. Well, before I introduce my special guest today, I feel that it's important to offer my condolences and sincere sympathies to the families and the friends of those gunned down at Virginia Tech on Monday. It is indeed an event that we will all never forget. One of those killed was a young lady right here in my hometown, Champaign, Illinois. And I can't imagine being the parent of one of the children who lost their life. But in the last 2 days, we have learned some things about the gunman, that there were signs that Cho Sang-wi had severe mental problems. Cho's roommate apparently told the police he might be suicidal, prompting them to issue a temporary detention order, sending him to a mental health facility for evaluation on months back. Neighbors, roommates, and teachers described Cho as withdrawn and rarely spoke. Two students who said they were Cho's roommates said he had harassed several female students and once told them he wanted to kill himself, which prompted those roommates to report their concerns to the police. They all did the right thing in reporting these incidents. But recently, students were so bothered by the violence in Cho's writings in his English classes that some didn't even show up to class because they didn't want to hear them. The professors were aware of the trouble and violent essays he wrote and could have asked about it and even reported it. In other words, there were signs that students and teachers observed that were out of the ordinary. But, you know, I'm not trying to point blame, but, you know, if people are trained to observe the right things and know what to do, it's often possible to avoid things like this. And back in January, this is how I know this, I had on the show Jerry Rudolph, co-founder of Youth Crime Watch of America, whose program is in 750 locations in the U.S., schools, churches, all kinds of places, and also in 15 countries. And it's a program that really works to help youth monitor potential violence and crime in their schools and their surroundings. And it's been successfully short-circuiting unknown numbers, countless numbers of violent situations, including shootings. And now Youth Crime Watch has recently instituted College Crime Watch and is offering training for campuses. And interestingly enough, they've scheduled for Northern Virginia, May 15th and 16th, a conference to set up potential programs for colleges in that area to prevent this kind of thing. Youth Crime Watch of America also is conducting that same program in North Florida and South Florida later in May. And that's as far out as they've scheduled, I think. I strongly encourage anyone, students or instructors and professors, parents, anyone connected with a college or a university in these areas to attend one of these conferences and make it a priority to become informed about what College Crime Watch can do to protect the kids and faculty in your school. Terry Modglen, who's the Executive Director of Youth Crime Watch of America, states five key things students can do to make themselves safer on campus. Always be aware of your surroundings. Recognize people or things that are out of the ordinary. Then reach out to students who are under intense emotional stress, who may become a threat to themselves or to others. And if you're not sure, report it anyway. Be sure to share this kind of information or any information you get, you have about someone with your peers. Youth Crime Watch has a proven record of preventing school shootings and other kinds of crime in the U.S. and abroad. College Crime Watch focuses on student leaders acting in concert to prevent campus violence. And to learn more about College Crime Watch of America, simply go to www.collegecrimewatch.org and also visit www.ycwa.org, Youth Crime Watch of America, to learn more. And I know Terry, and he would be thrilled to hear from you. You can call him at 202-466-3322. That's 202-466-3322 to talk to either he or his staff in Washington, D.C. And I think, you know, if there's anything we can do to prevent this kind of violence in the future, we need to act. We're always empowered when we act. We feel helpless when we don't. So take that and run with it. Well, now I'd like to bring on a special lady who is helping to champion the cause of combating malaria and other insect-spread diseases impacting the developing world. Her name is Ellen Udy, and I'll just read a bit of her bio here. She's from Montreal, Canada originally, and began her acting career in shows for the CBC, CTV, and Global Canadian Television Networks. Ellen studied at Montreal's Dome Theatre School, pursued a degree in film communications at Montreal's Dawson College, while continuing her acting career in Canadian movies. And then she moved to New York for her soap series gig on As the World Turns. And in Los Angeles, among the plays, Helen has produced and directed an award-winning play called Out in America. While she was working as a series regular on the American CBS television series Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman, I remember that. And after that, Helen launched 5K Films and began to produce and direct feature films, and she has 3 independent movies to her credit to date. And currently, she's producing a dark comedy feature film titled Zero Principle. But today she's here with me because of an eye-opening documentary she's produced, co-produced, titled 3 Billion and Counting. And that will be released, as I understand it, this fall or winter. Well, welcome, Ellen, to The Power of One. What's your mission?
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Oh, you're welcome. I don't. Sometimes it's hard to know where to begin on a topic like this. I guess just for the audience's sake and the listeners' sake, maybe you can tell us a little bit about how did you get into acting and the whole movie business and film business. Was your family involved in Hollywood? Or?
Well, no, my family was actually not. I definitely had a family of artists, but it's funny how things do come around. It's all sort of interrelated as to how I ended up here producing this documentary.
Uh-huh.
When I grew up, I grew up in the middle of a mountain, and at the bottom of the mountain was the lower class. If you can call it that.
Uh-huh.
The middle class is where I was at, just at the edge there, just above the train tracks, literally.
Uh-huh.
And then the upper class, and we all went to the same school. When I was a kid, you know, we all played together. But as I got into my teens, I started to notice that there was a disparity in terms of behavior and in just in terms of opportunity for the
mm-hmm.
different classes. And it became kind of an important focus of mine. Some of the children I went to school with were from an orphanage that
mm-hmm.
was just down the street. And I became very interested in sort of the unfairness of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I wanted to communicate to these kids, you know, that things could be different, or I don't know. I had some desire to communicate to them. And I was in a movie. I was watching a movie one day called Gallipoli about the Australian War. And I don't know how many people have seen that movie, but at the end of the movie, you follow this young kid in the war, in the Australian War. I guess it was the Boer War. I'm not very good at this stuff. I don't remember which war it was. I was just emotionally
I wouldn't
infected.
Know.
Yeah, okay, good. I don't feel so bad. But at the end of the movie, this young fellow, he runs into battle, and you know that they're all going to be killed, and this bullet hits him in the chest, and it was such a profound, I was so profoundly emotionally involved in the movie that I literally leant forward with the impact of the bullet. And I was, as I was going back, I looked around, and the whole theater had gasped, and everybody in the whole theater had leant forward the same way I did.
Really?
Yeah, they had all had this emotional, profound emotional experience together. And at that moment, I got it. I got that. At that point, I thought, acting is communicating.
Mm-hmm.
Acting is sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of hooked from that moment on. I wanted to be an actor from that moment on.
Wow.
So that's sort of what happened. But my parents were very, very supportive and encouraging of anything I wanted to do. I remember Jodie Foster once saying in a speech that she had to thank her mother for making her think that everything she did was amazing. And
yeah.
I had the same kind of parents. They would just, anything I wanted to do, they believed I could be the best at. So they encouraged me.
Well, you were fortunate. Not
yeah.
everybody has that kind of encouragement. But,
I know.
Well, listen, we're going to have to break. But when we get back, I really want to get into why Ellen became motivated to become familiar with the malaria epidemic in developing countries. Stay tuned to The Power of One. I'm Deborah Berg.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you in need of an exciting speaker for your next event? Deborah Berg offers a powerful message of hope and challenge. Deborah Berg is the nation's premier authority on the new civic America. A successful entrepreneur, former legislative analyst, author, and speaker, Deborah has interviewed dozens of Americans who have taken on tough social problems and succeeded. The author of Chicken Soup for the College Soul says, Deborah's ideas can change your life. Recently featured in the Chicago Sun-Times, Deborah's book, The Power of One, is now available in soft copy and ebook. For speaking or book signing engagements, please contact Deborah directly through email at mail@deberaberg.com. That's mail@deberaberg.com. Schedule Deborah Berg today for your next event and get her book, The Power of One, at a special price when you visit yourpowermission.com. Deborah Berg, compassionate, inclusive, and engaging.
Divorce, child custody, support, and visitation, division of property, attorneys, court. Just the thought of divorce is stressful enough. Never mind the combative, destructive, and expensive process. Is there a better way? Yes, divorce mediation. On Divorce Mediation, Myths and Facts, host Philip Mulford, one of the country's top divorce mediators, will discuss this incredibly successful alternative. Formerly a practicing attorney, Philip will explore the myths and facts about a process that has kept his clients out of court and saved them thousands of dollars. If you aren't familiar with divorce mediation, or your lawyer has told you it's not appropriate for your case, this show is for you. After listening to Divorce Mediation, Myths and Facts, you'll tell anyone considering a divorce, go to mediation first. Divorce Mediation, changing the culture of divorce.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to The Power of One, What's Your Mission? With Deborah Berg. If you have a question or comment, call us right now, toll free, 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Now back to the show. Here's Deborah.
Welcome back. We're here with Ellen Udy, and she is co-producer of a new documentary called 3 Billion and Counting. Ellen, tell me, how did you know you wanted to be a producer, and how did you get into documentaries?
Well, I've been producing stuff at school since I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
I just had a community that we would always put plays on, and it was really fun to be creative. And again, communication was really a big thing in my family and mm-hmm. a big thing for me. So as I started acting, there were creative ideas that I wanted to put forth, and so it motivated me to do things on my own. I guess you can call that a producer. Producer is such a loose term.
Yeah.
Who knows what it means?
Yeah, that's true.
Getting it done. That's what producers
yes.
mean.
Yes. Now, had you done any documentaries before this one?
No, this was my first documentary, and I had no idea that I had an interest in documentaries. You know, you just get led by the nose, and you find yourself somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So this was the first, you know, this is the first documentary that has appeared before me.
And how did you become motivated to pursue this whole topic?
Well, it was really interesting. I was actually at a party, sitting in the kitchen, because that's where I usually am at a party. And I was engaged in a really interesting conversation with somebody that was a little bit provoking. And I think we ended up on politics or something. I don't even know how we got to the topic, but he basically said to me, oh, yes, you Canadians, you socialists, you banned DDT, and because of that, children are dying in Africa, which was a very huge thing to say to somebody who cares so much about people. I had no idea what he was talking about, so I did get on the web and kind of discovered about malaria through this conversation at this party and hooked up with this guy who's a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was clearly motivated and disturbed about what was going on,
mm-hmm.
And we decided to do a documentary together.
Huh.
And so that's kind of the beginning of it, really, was in a conversation in the kitchen. Always hang out in the kitchen.
Well, you can eat, talk politics, and, you know,
and
plan your next film.
That's right, exactly. That's what things happen.
So you told me you did quite a bit of background research on the topic of malaria before you actually went out to travel to other countries to physically do the documentary. What kind of research did you do? What did you find out?
Well, I had to educate myself because I had thought that malaria was this disease, like an old-timey disease that never happened anymore, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was an antique disease in my mind.
Okay, yeah.
So when I made this first discovery, I was really motivated, and the numbers were so awe-inspiring, and to know that it's one of the major killers of children under 5 worldwide.
Hmm.
So to know that people were dying of a disease that I in America, or even as a Canadian, had absolutely no idea even existed anymore,
yeah.
really, really took my mind. And there's so much information available on the web, so I did as much research as I could, and that's where I started to put all the ideas together for the documentary and the places we needed to go.
Well, I think the fact that is on your website, which is 3 billion, that's the number 3billionandcounting.com, malaria infects more than 500 million people a year.
Right.
That's more than the total population of the U.S., Canada, and Mexico combined.
Exactly.
And that is unfathomable. I had no idea.
Right.
And, you know, and I'm sure that's what you encountered and how you felt, too. Now, why is the U.S., Canada, and basically Mexico, why are we relatively free of malaria?
Right. The developed world versus the undeveloped world, if you have to qualify it in some
mm-hmm.
way. And the thing is that during World War II, we suffered from malaria greatly. The whole world was suffering from malaria.
Mm-hmm.
But in World War II, through some hazard, we discovered DDT, and we started spraying our soldiers with it, and a lot of people were saved by it. We found that DDT prevented ticks. It prevented all sorts of vector-borne diseases, and soldiers certainly abroad were suffering tremendously from it.
Mm-hmm.
So we used it then, and it became this sort of miracle chemical, and it then fell into the developing world, developed world culture. We used it in agriculture. We sprayed our areas with it, our developed world with it, and along with it removing pests from agriculture, it also removed tremendous diseases from human beings. So things like typhus and dengue fever and yellow fever, and so many diseases were cured by it. It was this miracle thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we got on top of the disease, and then we started to screen our doors. We started to be able to cure it, because it wasn't such an epidemic. It wasn't occurring in epidemic proportions, and in that way, slowly but surely, or rather very quickly, we managed to eradicate it. No sooner did we eradicate it than we banned this chemical, DDT, in the developed world, and it had tremendously horrible consequences for the developing world, because, of course, they always follow suit.
Now, we banned it when? In the 50s?
No, we banned it in 1972.
Oh, 1972.
But certainly by the 50s and 60s, malaria, you know, by the 50s, malaria had been eradicated.
Mm-hmm.
DDT was becoming, it was actually by the 60s, 90% of DDT was being sent overseas to combat malaria.
Okay.
And we were no longer using it as much in agriculture because it was no longer effective.
Mm-hmm.
And we were developing other chemicals that mm-hmm. the mosquitoes didn't have a resistance to.
Okay.
So, but by that time, we didn't have all those vector-borne diseases to deal with. We had literally eradicated from the scene.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, well, and so in the meantime, when we eradicated DDT, then the developing world ended up becoming more susceptible to insect-borne diseases. And, you know, maybe you can explain to our audience, because I know, I mean, I can't even fathom what it's like, but let's take Africa, for example. An African family going through malaria with their children, How do they deal with that?
Yeah, that there's so many consequences of a country, or rather a continent, falling ill, and it really starts at a ground level. These people are poor, and they're in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few hospitals. There's very few outreach for these people. So when a child falls ill, they may have to walk 40 miles, or maybe travel by some donkey or horse or so on, but really, really, the majority of them don't have cars, so they get to a hospital that may be 40 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have to be seen. They have to, the child has to be treated. That's expensive. They have to buy some drug, which is at least $2.40 for them.
Mm.
Their family has to visit them and give them food while they're in the hospital, because the hospital doesn't provide for that.
Yeah.
There's loss of wages. And then they have to travel back with that child, that if the child makes it, and they don't have to then have a funeral for the child, that the whole family have to attend.
Mm-hmm.
So their lives are so wrapped up in disease,
mm-hmm.
and they're exhausted by it when they're well.
Yeah.
So
they're only making hundreds, in a good year, they're making a couple thousand a year. In American dollars, mostly less, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And so trying to pay for vaccines and funerals and travel and doctors and all of that is, you know, financially debilitating.
Right. In Uganda, the average rent is $2.50 a month. Now, mm-hmm. if that's the case with the rent, you can imagine what the
mm-hmm.
population is making.
Mm-hmm.
And a bed net costs $5, so it costs 2 months' rent.
Wow.
In Uganda. And right now, that is the best prevention that they have, is a bed net. And they're so hungry and tired and poor that it's very hard to see ahead to the future when their children are hungry today. And how are they going to pay their rent how are they going to, what do they choose, a bed net that costs 2 months rent or the month's rent in food, you know?
Okay, so if how do you feel about the banning of DDT? Should we go back to DDT? Is there any other option for these countries right now?
Well, here's the thing. You know, nothing is a black and white issue, and I feel often in the world we do attack things like black and white, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a matter of gray, I find, in most things in life, and it's no different for DDT. In America, we don't need DDT right now. We can afford more expensive, potentially more toxic chemicals, but they don't last as long. There are problems with DDT that Americans don't have to face.
Mm-hmm.
But in a poor country like Africa, DDT, in my mind, DDT is an incredible chemical. I wish it would come back worldwide. Okay, but that's a very broad statement.
Mm-hmm.
So what would really be appropriate is to consider that the developing world is not like America or the developing developed
world. Well, I mean, they're talking about basic survival. So if you could
get past,
you know, the point where you're worried about just surviving.
That's right.
Which it seems like this is impacting a lot.
That's right.
Then, you know, you could reverse a lot.
That's right.
So, but the general consensus is not to bring it back, I presume.
Well, no, here's the wonderful thing. Since the 2 years that we started this documentary, fortunately, it has come to the attention of people like President Bush and other leaders in, you know, the United Nations and the World Health Organization, so on and so forth. And they've been battling with this concept, and it has been getting more attention. And we are seeing that Africa and other developing countries are now being encouraged and supported in the use of DDT. But there's so much red tape
mm-hmm.
to get through that
mm-hmm.
even Uganda, I think, has been battling for a year. It's been approved for them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still battling red tape. And while they're battling red tape, in this year, 352 children die a day.
Oh, my.
A day.
Yeah.
So it's not, we're not moving fast enough. We need to move more quickly.
Well, I know that you said that, you know, we were talking before the show that there is hope. And when we come back from the break, I want to talk about that and some things that are being done proactively. When we return to the Power of One, I'm Deborah Berg. Stay tuned.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you in need of an exciting speaker for your next event? Deborah Berg offers a powerful message of hope and challenge. Deborah Berg is the nation's premier authority on the new civic America. A successful entrepreneur, former legislative analyst, author, and speaker, Deborah has interviewed dozens of Americans who have taken on tough social problems and succeeded. The author of Chicken Soup for the College Soul says, Deborah's ideas can change your life. Recently featured in the Chicago Sun-Times, Deborah's book, The Power of One, is now available in soft copy and ebook. For speaking or book signing engagements, please contact Deborah directly through email at mail@deberaberg.com. That's mail@deberaberg.com. Schedule Deborah Berg today for your next event and get her book, The Power of One, at a special price when you visit yourpowermission.com. Deborah Berg, compassionate, inclusive, and engaging.
Here's a show for baseball players, coaches, parents, and those who love the game. At least 90% of sports success, including baseball, requires mental strength in order to fully benefit from technical ability. And the higher the competition level, the more critical it becomes to possess mental muscle. Tune in every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time to Championship Thinking, hosted by Jim Meyer, and brought to you by the National High School Baseball Coaches Association. Jim, sports psychology coach, trainer, and author of numerous articles and the workbook, Championship Thinking, Building Mental Muscle in Baseball, simplifies the mental game with easy-to-understand tools and tips. With his weekly guest, Jim draws from successes with professionals, college, high school, and youth teams, coaches, and players. Learn how to remain confident and focused at crunch time, when pressure, tension, and anxiety like to make an uninvited appearance. Tune in and tune up your mental and technical knowledge and skills with Championship Thinking every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on America's Voice, Voice America.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to The Power of One, What's Your Mission? With Deborah Berg. If you have a question or comment, call us right now, toll free, 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Now back to the show. Here's Deborah.
Welcome back to The Power of One. Before I get into questions for Ellen about her travels for this documentary, we have a caller, Pam, from California. Pam, you there?
Hi.
Hi, Pam. Do you have a question for Ellen?
Yes, I have a question for Ellen. Hi, Ellen.
Hi.
My question is, when you returned from Africa, how did you feel when you returned home? What was your outlook on life? How was it changed by what you saw over there and what you did? And the other part is, will this documentary be available for the schools and libraries across the USA?
Oh, okay. Wow. I felt that I understood. When I came home, I felt that the world is a huge, huge place. And the world that I've been living in was a very small one. And there's so much going on in the world that actually, you know, we may think that Africa doesn't affect us as Americans, but it does on so many levels impact our daily lives. It drains our resources. If it was doing well, it would be contributing to the world. So many children that just don't have opportunity, and that made me tremendously sad. It was hard when I got back to just go and, you know, mm-hmm. enjoy myself. So that was that. And yes, it will be available. We're going to try to make it as available as possible. We plan to release it theatrically, and that is going to happen. So, but after that, we're going to make it as available as possible to anybody that would like to use it or see it. Yeah,
like straight to DVD.
It's not going to go straight to DVD. It's going to be in the theaters worldwide. Well, not worldwide, but, well, who knows?
Yeah.
Let's be hopeful.
Great. Yeah.
Let's be hopeful. Let's hope for that. But once it does show in the theaters, then it'll probably go to video, and it will be available. And certainly you can stay on the website, 3billionandcounting.com, and follow its progress. And if you want to get a copy of it after that, certainly we'll be able to make it available to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. We have there's a video clip actually on 3 Billion and Counting's website for YouTube video that gives us a brief overview of the kinds of things you saw. And tell us a little bit about your travels. What countries did you go to film this, and where's your focus mainly in the documentary?
I had to make a list because we went to so many countries.
Really?
My partner helped me with this list. We started in South Africa. We went to Swaziland, Mozambique, Kenya, Tanzania. Then we went to India, Chennai, Cochin, Delhi. Indonesia, Bali, Kuala Lumpur, Panama, Washington, San Francisco. And we may still not have finished our travels.
Oh, really?
But the focus is on Africa because, of course, it's a very large continent, and it is suffering the most.
Okay.
India was continuing to use DDT for far longer than Africa. It may, in fact, and don't quote me on this, still be using DDT. So Africa is far, far, far behind. It's had 30 years for this mm-hmm. for this pandemic to really spread.
Back in June of 2005, President Bush launched the President's Malaria Initiative, which is a five-year, $1.2 billion program to combat it in 15 of the hardest-hit African nations. And the White House is saying that that program is already starting to save lives, spreading some hope that the money that's being sent is actually having an impact. And it's reached more than 6 million Africans. I'm reading from a press release here from the White House site. And 30 million more will receive life-saving medicine, sprays, and nets as the program expands. Now, why have we not done this before? Have we just not been aware of it? What's going on in the politics of this, maybe, that you can enlighten us on?
Oh, this is a very touchy subject. It's going to take the whole documentary to explain this. But there are a lot of theories, and I'm going to be really polite about it right now.
Okay.
Because it's the best thing to do. And honestly, I have a lot of questions. I don't necessarily have answers, but I think asking questions really, really brings you to great conclusions and mm-hmm. motivates change. In 1972, we were concerned about many, many things. One of the major things we were concerned about was world overpopulation.
Mm-hmm.
Did that factor into it?
Yeah.
Who knows? It's a big question.
Mm-hmm.
Have our feelings about that changed, or are they beginning to change as we realize that we do have the resources to feed the world?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, that might be changing as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of theories about why this happened. It may have been simple negligence.
Mm-hmm.
When you ban a chemical, you don't realize that you're banning it for the whole world, even if you're only banning it in America.
Yeah.
You may not have meant to do that, but that's usually what happens. People follow along the footsteps.
Well, I think back then we were less globally minded.
That's right.
We were very protectionist, and of course we had the Cold War. All those things that kept us from, you know, putting resources elsewhere or focusing on the world as, you know,
that's right,
where we're so interdependent as we are now, financially, economically, so forth. So I can see why the mental shift. But you had told me, I think, earlier that in the past 10 years, there's been a gradual awareness, more of an awareness of this, of what's going on, and that we may actually be close to the tipping point of being able to do something really,
monumental,
very effectively, and that you're hoping that, you know, Bono and the president and your documentary and things like this will, you know, make that tipping point occur.
Absolutely. I mean, the first thing is awareness, and the first thing is quelling fears.
Mm-hmm.
And when people become aware and they become fearless, so much is possible, as you probably know and your listeners probably know.
Mm-hmm.
It's the beginning. But, a lot of money has been spent, and possibly the money is being, we're learning more about how to spend our money and how to get it to the ground. There's so many notorious incidences of, I can remember the concert for Bangladesh where none of the money got to Bangladesh. Now
yeah.
Everything was meant to go there, but just all the people that had to be paid, suddenly
mm-hmm.
we were out of pot, you know, we were paying for the event as opposed to donating to the event. And things like that do occur. We're learning more about that. President Bush is definitely going forward about accountability and transparency in his government organization so that he knows where the money is going and that it is being spent efficiently. And that's going to make a huge difference.
Well, a lot of the governments over there are very volatile. One day they're in one hand, the next they're in another, and you don't know where the money went. Maybe somebody just took it. You know,
well, you know,
those kinds of things. I mean, they do happen.
Yes, and
in Nigeria, I mean, there's a lot of situations where, you know, who knows where the money goes and the wealth gets shifted to.
Well, and that's true, and that actually is very pertinent to your book, The Power of One, because your book seems to address small people doing small things on the ground, and sometimes it's more effective when you get into. And I don't mean bureaucracy in the negative sense, but when you're dealing with a bureaucracy, you're dealing with things on such a large scale, they can get out of hand. And
mm-hmm.
a lot of the communities that are just small hands-on communities receiving money from donors, they can get on the ground right there and make mm-hmm. things happen. And a lot of that is occurring.
Yeah.
And that is definitely what your radio show is about. That's what we're trying to put forth. Wonderful charity called the Lombardo Spray. It's LSDI. I have to say LSDI. They are a hands-on community in Africa, and they're doing amazing things just as a small community. So we're trying to put the focus on those kinds of charity organizations as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you think about, you know, just the importance of mosquito nets.
Yeah.
You know, how expensive can they be, and, you know, how can we get them there?
Well, we shouldn't ask people to pay for them when they can't pay for them.
Right.
We should be giving them out, and that is something that is changing with USAID, which is a government organization, thanks to Bush and Senator Coburn, is that we're really looking at the way they're spending the money. And if they've been selling bed nets to Africans that can't afford them, it's not going to be a tremendously effective way to go about things. So they are being asked to hand these bed nets out, and I think that that's going to make a huge difference.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost, you know, why wasn't that thought of before?
Almost a no-brainer, but yeah.
Exactly.
Gosh. Oh, well, anyway, what hope can you give us? What have you seen recently? Is the documentary needed at this point? I mean, there are things being done.
Right.
But how do you see your documentary impacting and influencing change?
Okay. Well, I think
hope it will?
I hope that it will on many levels, not just about malaria, but about educating people who donate their money to charities, who want to do well, who to understand better about the way the world is run and the politics of well-meaning organizations, for people to be aware that they need to look more in depth into where they're channeling their energies and are those organizations speaking for them and doing things the way they see fit. That's why it's so great to be on your show, because I've really discovered that the power of smaller organizations seem to do better in situations of great need. And that all of the things that we've heard about in life, like the problems with DDT, life is not a black and white situation. It's a gray, it's usually a matter of gray areas. And to be able to put forth an idea like this, for people to see this movie and to see how it applies to them, not just about malaria, but about the way the world is run and how that affects them, I'm really hoping that we make an impact that way, and that will impact malaria. It will impact poverty. It will impact so many areas of our own lives that is bound to have a worldwide benefit. That's what I'm hoping. Is that too much to ask?
Yeah. You just want to change the world, Ellen.
I want to change the world.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Well, I think you're well on your way. I think awareness, somebody who's taking the time to put it together in a form that you and I, that the average person can really grab onto and bring home, so that it is something they feel that they really understand. It's not a, you know, some directive coming from the federal government and, oh, well, let's the bureaucrat do it. You know, I think we all need to be much better educated now that we are an interconnected world.
Yes.
Well, I'll pursue more of that when we return from our break with Ellen Udy, co-producer of 3 Billion and Counting. When we return, I'm Deborah Berg. Stay tuned.
Now you can listen to your favorite hosts on your cell phone by clicking the banner on our homepage, News Talk Radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you in need of an exciting speaker for your next event? Deborah Berg offers a powerful message of hope and challenge. Deborah Berg is the nation's premier authority on the new civic America. A successful entrepreneur, former legislative analyst, author, and speaker, Deborah has interviewed dozens of Americans who have taken on tough social problems and succeeded. The author of Chicken Soup for the College Soul says, Deborah's ideas can change your life. Recently featured in the Chicago Sun-Times, Deborah's book, The Power of One, is now available in soft copy and ebook. For speaking or book signing engagements, please contact Deborah directly through email at mail@deberaberg.com. That's mail@deberaberg.com. Schedule Deborah Berg today for your next event and get her book, The Power of One, at a special price when you visit yourpowermission.com. Deborah Berg, compassionate, inclusive, and engaging.
The Carrie Douglas Show, with the CEO of Worldwide Music Incorporated and the founder and publisher of Gospel Truth Magazine, Carrie Douglas. By tuning in weekly, you will gain insight, tips, and tools to help get your career started. From how to market yourself to distribution of your product, learn the power of faith-based marketing and much more on The Carrie Douglas Show. Join Carrie each week with guests from the gospel music industry, entrepreneurs, speakers, and authors as they discuss faith-based news, events, and trends. The Carrie Douglas Douglas Show with Carrie Douglas, broadcast each Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, and is brought to you by Gospel Truth Magazine and Worldwide Music Incorporated on the Voice America channel. The Carrie Douglas Show with Carrie Douglas, your premier source for faith-based entertainment, news, events, and trends. Listen wherever, whenever, voiceamerica.com.
You're listening to The Power of One, What's Your Mission? With Deborah Berg. If you have a question or comment, call us right now, toll free, 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Now back to the show. Here's Deborah.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Ellen Udy, co-producer of the upcoming documentary, 3 Billion and Counting, about primarily malaria in Africa and the impact it's having on that country, the devastating impact, and what can be done about it, what governments are doing about it now. And Ellen, I know that you had, of course, on something like this where you're traveling through so many countries and being impacted emotionally by what you're seeing, what were some of the other challenges that you found along the way?
Well, I think in general the biggest challenge that I experienced was that there were such varying ways of dealing with the subject matter. It was almost like we were confronting organizations. We didn't mean to be confronting,
mm-hmm.
but it was confronting because the issue is such a political one. We would meet small organizations that were afraid to talk to us about, in Mozambique in particular, afraid to talk to us about DDT as a prevention because they were afraid of losing their funding.
Oh.
So they would have an interview with us, and then they would call us up the next day, and they would say, oh, please don't say anything in that interview. Please, please, please. They were begging us.
Huh.
What is so wonderful about that is a year later, Mozambique, among some of the other African countries, is going to be using DDT. So in a year, we saw change. But it was so hard for us to see these people on the ground doing the best that they could and wanting to be honest with us about what they thought would help them,
mm-hmm.
and then calling us the next day to tell us not to tell the world about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was horrible. And the other thing was visiting these hospitals with broken windows,
mm-hmm.
with waiting rooms packed to such an extent that they had no chairs. People were lying on top of each other,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not exaggerating,
mm-hmm.
in order to be seen by two or three doctors. Now, if you're thinking a child... 350 children are dying a day in Uganda alone.
It would just be overwhelming.
Oh,
for
it was
any
so
doc.
Overwhelming.
Oh.
You did feel hopeless, and you felt the exhaustion of these people, and you so much wanted to do something,
mm-hmm.
but you know, doing it one person at a time seems just impossible.
Yeah.
So, it days we would be just exhausted and really blue.
Did you film most of this in 2006, or?
We filmed most of it in 2005, and in 2006 we traveled through the States because we wanted to understand what was going on, and we had to correlate everything because we have a great hand in what is going on overseas,
mm-hmm.
a great hand. So we spent most of 2006 traveling through America and talking to scientists, and Senator Coburn was a big person that we were able to meet with and is doing a lot for the cause. And
where is Senator Coburn? What state?
Oh, gosh, don't ask me that.
Okay. Uh-oh. Gotcha.
He met him in Washington, so that's all I know.
Okay.
I take a plane and I get there.
As long as he was in Washington, that's okay.
Wherever the plane gets me, that's where he is.
Now, apparently, you had mentioned something on your website or to me at some point where that there are actually diseases here in the U.S. that are insect-borne diseases that we might want to be concerned about, too.
Right.
Those growing diseases?
There is a theory, and those of you listening can judge for yourself, but West Nile virus is a vector-borne disease. There are a couple of diseases that have popped up, resurfaced, or rather surfaced, just made their entrance in the past couple of years, and there is a theory that we are not using DDT, and 30 years later, we're starting to see the advent of these diseases. Now, I want to point out also that when Katrina happened, the first thing we did was spray, take helicopters and spray the whole area, whether people were there or not. Those helicopters dumped pesticides on New Orleans because we were terrified of an outbreak of malaria or yellow fever, diseases we haven't seen before, and we prevented it that quickly. But we dumped pesticides indiscriminately all over the whole of New Orleans, and yet we won't let Africa spray inside their houses discreetly. So what, you know, it raises questions.
Well, when you say we won't, do you mean the UN? Do you mean the U.S.? Do you mean who has jurisdiction and who can say that they can or can't? Or is it the government over there that's saying that they shouldn't?
No, the government over there is being influenced by the money and the power of the governments of the developed world. So, you know, name a government in the developed world. They probably are contributing to this. But America is one of the most powerful countries.
Yeah.
So, like I said previously, whatever we say, people follow suit.
Mm-hmm.
So we may say, oh, no, go ahead and do it. But if we don't accept their produce, they get their hands slapped.
Mm-hmm.
So this country is stuck between a rock and a hard place. It can't provide a living for itself because it can't sell it. It can't export its produce if it wants to use a life-saving chemical.
If you have no health, then you can't work. If your kids don't, kids die, then you have no future generation. So, you know, and that and AIDS, you said it's larger than AIDS.
It's actually more epidemic than AIDS, and isn't it crazy that we don't know about it?
Yeah.
And we don't know about it because it doesn't affect us.
Yeah.
And it's not that we mean to be myopic, but it's just innate. We walk out on the street every day. We never meet anybody with malaria. In Africa, you would be hard-pressed to find somebody that hasn't had a family member die of malaria.
Hmm.
So everyone is familiar with it as we are the common cold, except they die of it.
What can we do besides go to your documentary when it comes out, which you said optimistically would be Christmas, but maybe a little bit later because of the editing time it's taking? What can we do as individuals at this point?
Well, as individuals at this point, you can definitely choose charities that are doing things properly, that are giving bed nets out and not selling bed nets. That's a great prevention.
Okay.
You can become aware that, you know, if you want to make a contribution, you need to become aware of who you're contributing to do your work for you.
Always
and
important.
You can ask your government when it's sending money, your taxpayer dollars, overseas to do good works, that money is being spent on the ground. USAID 2 years ago got given $90 million of our taxpayer funds on the issue of malaria. They spent 95% of it, never left the USA.
Oh my.
5% of that money got to Africa, but USAID was in the effort of selling bed nets to people that couldn't afford them.
Yeah.
Now, who knows why they chose this path, but when we ask our government to really stay on our government tax dollars and spend them wisely, we're helping the world and we're helping ourselves, because then more of that money can be spent efficiently at home.
Mm-hmm.
There's more of it.
Well, I'm going to have to close out here pretty soon, but I want people to go to 3 Billion and Counting. That's the number 3billionandcounting.com. You can really get educated there. It's a great content site on this topic. Keep track of where the documentary is in production and know when it's coming out. And is there any other website we should know about or any other information we should know about?
You know, I really do want to promote Africa Fighting Malaria.
Okay.
Africa Fighting Malaria, I think it's .com. My goodness, I can't read my writing.
Okay.
AfricaFightingMalaria.org is a wonderful organization that will keep you informed and make sure that you're doing the right thing if you're interested. And also LSDI. And LSDI, you can email, it's such a small organization, you can email Elizabeth Street at LSDI_COORD@tvcaro.co.mz. Gosh, I hope I got it.
Okay.
I can't read my writing.
No,
I need glasses.
You're just like me. Well, Ellen, thank you for taking the time to be with me on the show today. I wish you all the best on the success of this very important film, and thank you for sharing with myself and our listeners what each of us can do to help stamp out insect-borne disease throughout the world. best wishes on your future career success as well.
Thanks so much, Deborah.
And thank you for tuning in today. I hope you've been empowered by today's show. Please go to www.yourpowermission.com to get your book, The Power of One, and sign up for the Heroes newsletter to stay up to date on the amazing people and breakthroughs occurring throughout America and around the world to give you hope. I'm your host, Deborah Burke. Do have a terrific rest of the week.
Your Power Mission would like to thank you for listening to The Power of One. What's your mission? Tune in next Wednesday for another rousing hour of The Power of One. What's your mission? With Deborah Berg, your bump from the soundbite slump.